Boys, God, I love going on road trips, but man, it feels good to be home. You know, last week's beast was nice, but God, it's nice being home.
I know the last time these mics were on, we were all looking at each other pretty loose. But we were all
better than the year before.
Yes, we were all sitting at camp
substantially.
You know? Yes, we progressively, I think, through the last show, got a little drunker and drunker. Oh, you was probably pretty sober at first, you guys.
I drove, so I was final night.
I was not sober in the least.
That was a good time, though.
Oh, it was an awesome time. Yeah.
Tonight, we're going to be talking to one of the participants at the Beast that none of us really got to meet. So,
this is going to be a fun one tonight.
Good talk to Scott Grassy.
Yep. Keystone Guide Services.
Mark asked him a question the other day, you know, on the Instagram post, you know, promoting the show, and, do you ever catch small muskie? I wondered the same thing. The guy puts up some giant fish, and it looks like all year round. He's out there in the cold snow. You see it. He's out there. That's tough.
He's putting the time in. He's doing a good job at it.
Oh yeah, amazing.
Yeah, you gotta love the grind. And if you're gonna respect the grind, you better watch the grind. From a couple weeks ago's guest,
Michael McNaught.
Yeah, the grind is a good little clip.
I've watched it like 3 times. At least.
But tonight's show brought to you by Predator Fly Gear. Check them out, predatorflygear.com.
Yep, ARX Hooks, ARXHooks.com.
Alsdorf Genetic, you can find it at alsdorfgenetic.com.
I'm going to throw a little monkey wrench in the plugs and hit up Urban Fly Co. Go check them out on Instagram at Urban Fly Co.
Also Sims Fishing.
Yeah. That's everyone.
Yes, there is.
That's everyone we support, and everyone supports us.
So, don't forget Yeti.
Oh, yeah. Built for the Wild. Boom. So, Jay, you went on a float today.
Yeah, we went floating today. I took two guys out that they fish, and my one buddy from Columbus, he's smallmouth fisher a lot, but with all gear rod. And,
two flying newbies.
Yeah, no guys. Well, my cousin... Frank, he can roll cast and nymph fish for steelhead.
Did he bring his own rod?
No, he didn't. I just brought him.
What did you bring with you?
I had the 5-weight with actually like a 150 on it, and sink line, and my 6-weight crux. Cool. And both the same flies that guys were using 2 weeks ago when we had a really good day and a really good float. And I don't know, they both caught fish on fly. They both got their first fishing on the fly. 15's, you know, decent fish, but not a lot caught. And a lot of the ones that we did catch were, you know, small, even, you know.
Did you find anything coming out of any unordinary spots, or still the same that we've been finding?
A lot on rocks. Yeah, you've seen a pile of rocks. They were on these rocks. I don't know, maybe sun heats them up and stay on them. I don't know, but yeah, it was a little different. I wanted to mention that you say that, but, not in a lot of the same spots. I mean, when we come to the top end of the first riffle, I'm like, man, there should be fish right here. And you don't have to really cast that far. All them fish are just paddling up, you know, hiding in all those big boulders down underneath. And I couldn't get any to come up. I'm like, man. Right off the bat, though, in the start of the float, Jeremy was just throwing a gear rod. He caught two smallmouth, maybe 10 inches and 8 inches. And then went down a little further, switched to the fly rod. And, you know, it was a little bit of a...
A little bit of a struggle.
I can't believe how low it's running again already.
And clear as I've seen it all year. Clear. Like 3-4 feet of viz, Chad.
Our river never has that.
I was pooping. I'm looking down. I'm like, I can see the bottom.
Wait, you're pooping? Did you take selfies while you're doing it?
Yeah, I did. I took selfies while I was doing it. I'm looking down. I'm like, I can't believe that. But my buddy, he loved the boat. He thought it was cool that we just picked it right up off the trailer, walked it over. That boat, and I was to say, both the guys that I fished with are big, big guys. My cousin I fished with, he's
probably 250.
280, and he's probably 6'1". He said he was 280. And my buddy's probably 250, 260, and he's probably about 5'10". So the boat was bent in a U, like upside down.
It was like a banana.
It was like, both ends were like 3 inches further down in the water. I'm sitting like up high on a pedestal. I'm like, man, that's electric tall today.
So it was like a frowny face.
It was like a frowny, yeah, the boat looked like a frowny face going down the water. I wasn't even touching in the middle. It was like riding up out of the water.
That's great.
They did have little struggles casting in the beginning. You know, my cousin was a little more familiar with the fly rod. He was getting going.
As in, he's held one before.
Yeah, he's held one. He's caught fish with one before. So, never smallmouth, and then neither of them have, you know, hauled or tried any of that kind of stuff or casting, like, you know, over their head. Not my cousin's roll casted, but yeah. So the first my buddy had a really good Jeremy had a really good cast on, you know. For him, it was a great cast. It was perfect in the spot. It was right on the bank, right where it was supposed to be. And I'm like, that's going to be a fish. Strip, strip, strip. Man, he strip set because he doesn't have a predisposed one to trout set anyway. So he strip set. And I told him, this is how you set. You strip set with your hand. You know what I mean? You just rip it right into their face. And he, okay. Man, he strip set the shit out of this fish. And it was a decent fish, you know, the 15-inch. And at that point, he kind of, He had faith in the fly rod. He didn't pick up the gear rod for a long, long time until he was kind of worn out after 4 or 5 more hours of doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was cool. You know? And then, like I said, when he left at the end of the day, couldn't run into any stripers, by the way. Tried that spot. One turned out one decent smallmouth and no carp.
My pets weren't home?
No, they weren't home. Couldn't see any of them. But the water fire crap's not there. So that was amazing.
Nice. About time that's gone.
Yeah.
But, saw guys on the jet boat.
What?
Yeah, saw some guys on a jet boat on the river today.
Were they going down from where you took out?
They met us up, like, no, they were going up toward the
rollover. Dam.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they were like, you took that over there? It was like, yeah, we just picked it right up.
You're going to taking that up too there?
Yeah, picked it right up and did it. It was fine. You know, that's how we always do it, but yeah, no, nobody else was home.
They were fishermen?
A lot of, they're bass fishing.
Okay.
They said they had put in further down the river, like near right here, and they fished all that for bass and did pretty well too with the jet.
Okay.
Or not pretty well. They said they caught a couple decent ones and most smaller fish. The same thing we kind of found.
Yeah.
Two or three decent fish and most,
then a lot
of dinks. That was, you know. No, I could see the bottom where the hybrids would be. I could see where they would be laying, and they weren't there.
It's crazy it's that clear.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, I could literally look at it, and I'm like, man, that's nuts. I don't know where the heck they could have been at. You know, we tried all that spot.
And they move around, man. They're migratory fish.
Sure. Whenever they go.
I don't know.
Man, I wonder if we catch one, if we could put like a GPS thing on it. A
homing beacon?
Yeah.
Like, we'll just track it around.
Track it.
Oh,
track it to see where it goes all the time.
Chase would never put that app down.
No.
He would never put it down.
Hybrid tracker.
It'd be ding, ding, ding. Whoop! Chase is following the hybrids again.
He's hopping around our river.
Speaking of that, Chase hasn't left the show, but he's just been working on Sundays. So he will make a triumphant return here one of these days.
He's been bummed. He's not happy about it, but you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Pay the bills.
Got to pay that bill.
Yeah, I got to leave today. I won't get to interview our guest today. I'm kind of bum hurt. I got to go up to a buddy of our guy I worked with, Cabin, and we're going to work up there tomorrow. So, fun.
Yeah.
Be something different. It won't be bad. We'll have a good time, but I'll be back tomorrow evening.
Do they have a TV up there? Are you able to watch Sunday Night Football?
I think they can get, like, the Bunny Ear station, so I probably will. If not, I'm really tired anyway. I'll probably go pass out.
You can go to the Kelly Hotel and watch the game.
Are you just working just there tomorrow?
Yeah, we're going to come home as soon as we get done with stuff. Hopefully be home 6 or 7. The latest. Cool. I know Mark's been busting out bunches of flies. I stopped by the house down into the workshop the other day just to see how progress has been going. Had a couple extra minutes and I think, man, I'm going to stop over there. I know he's been busy, you know.
Is he tying like a small Malaysian child?
Oh, my gosh. It was hot down there. It was like 150 degrees. I walked down there, and it's like he's like sweating in his underwear. He's got like six piles of it. These six are going somewhere. These six are going somewhere else.
His fingers are bleeding.
Oh, cool, man! Your fingers are bleeding. Like, I've been stuck with Eric's hooks and band-aids all over the place.
I did drive one in it the other day too. God, that thing's hurt.
Oh, you did it today too. This morning.
Yeah.
You stuck one. But. We did our first round of tails today.
I seen that. I almost thought I was going to have an allergic reaction.
I saw you skate out real quick, and I was like, oh, yeah, Jay's going to get sick.
I'm going to go eat.
You good guys, start.
Yeah.
39.
So,
for any getting cold.
Could you tell are any pretty prime? Or
Maybe four or five.
Yeah, I was going to say five or six was
cool. The rest of them are shaky at best, but they're going to be our practice for dyes and
clousers. Yeah, guys, and try to get the color, you know, where you want it.
Even though, like, you didn't tie, like, a, you know, bucktail game changer or anything like that.
Oh, yeah, the
know,
back end of a bucktail.
Yeah, smaller. Yep. You ain't going to use, so you ain't going to waste any.
I mean, we haven't even had anything below 32 yet this year. I mean, they haven't been packing on much. Now they're starting them. You're seeing them through the day. You're seeing them everywhere. They're going to be feeding harder, and they're going to get a lot better. But a lot of short, like, 2 to 2.5, 3 inch. Then there's a couple good ones in there, 4 or 5 inches.
Yeah. There were a couple long, like physically long tails. They just had a bunch of shit fibers on them, like 2 inch at most. But, like I said, they're going to be good for clousers.
You know what the bad part about that is, though, for the clousers? Them ones are always super hollow the whole way up the top, and they flare straight up. And you can't do nothing with it.
Yeah, they don't lay down.
It's just a junk tail. Although, back end changers. Again, you could use them for that.
Yep. So... I love the changers. But I found one fly today that I like almost as good as a changer. It's a double deceiver. Took Mark over to the pond. I was like, I haven't swam the fly yet. He's like, let's walk over to the pond and try it. Dude, I was standing there. I said, Mark, every bass I've had swipe at a musky fly has been right in front of me. I've just been dangling it. Like after a cast, just dangle it and kind of flop it around on the surface before I make another cast. He's like, whatever. He said, whatever. So I made one more cast, and as I was bringing my fly up to make another cast, boom, splash, like someone dropped a brick in front of us.
Literally.
I said, whoa, there's fish. He said, oh, that one's gone. Slap my fly on the water, and I see the fish come up behind it. It just opens its mouth and sucks this probably 7-inch double seaver in its face. Boom. I said, Mark, it didn't go anywhere. He's like, holy shit, that's a big fish.
It was a big
fish. Is huge. Heard of it 2021.
For a half acre farm pond, that was a 5-pound
super,
bass.
Oh, yeah. Super white, too.
Super white. And it had both hooks in its face, one in the top, one in the bottom.
Yeah, literally a half acre farm pond.
Man, it was a crusher.
Oh, yeah.
He was the king of that pond.
He stuck that fish 9 inches off the bank.
And the cool part was, I watched him eat it. Yeah, it's like everything you see on TV. The fish opened its mouth, flared its gills, and it just sucked it in. He didn't have to lunge forward or anything.
Water displacement.
Oh, yeah.
It has a word. It's not convection. It's
like you said,
cavitation.
He got both hooks, too.
Yeah.
So what's on the head of that? Is that just graffer? Or what
laser
is that?
Dub.
Laser dub?
Yeah.
I was wondering.
Yeah, it's just a double deceiver with a laser dub.
You got lead eyes in there too, don't you?
No.
No.
No lead eyes. Yeah. I just stuck them on in a E6000 and a clothes hanger or clothespin to set it.
Yep.
That way they're real close to each other. It has like a Mohawk and a Fu Manchu. So speaking of Fu Manchu and Mohawks and goofy looking stuff, when I do post a picture of that fish, everyone can comment and make fun of me because it looks like I have a pair of those glasses on with the big fake nose and a big fake mustache. But all of it's real. It's my real big nose and my real mustache. My wife was getting...
You zoom right in. Oh, it looks just like it.
My wife was getting on my shit today. She's like, why don't you trim that thing off? I said, just starting to look ridiculous, baby.
So that's about right.
Stuff's just starting to catch back up a little.
Yeah, oh yeah. So, but it's looking real ridiculous. Next week, we're going to have a little bit of something going on. I have soccer banquet. So, we're still having a show. I think we might change times a little bit, or I might just be late and leave my phone with you guys to start it without me.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. But if you guys don't hear, and we're back at the beginning, it's because I'm not here.
One of us can say that.
Yeah, sure. You guys can do it. Jace has done it before. That turned out really well.
Yeah.
So
we'll crack a beer and let Mark yell it.
Oh, yeah.
He has the enthusiasm to do it. Yeah. So, hey, we're going to go. We're going to take a break. We're going to give Scott a call, and we will be back with Scott from Keystone Guiding. And we're back with Scott Grassy from Keystone Anglers Guide Service. What's happening, Scott?
Nothing much. Just living a dream.
I hear that, man. Hey, do you want to introduce yourself for anyone who doesn't know who you are, doesn't follow you on any of the social medias?
Yep, I'm Scott Grassy, and I'm the head guide and the owner of Keystone Anglers Guide Service, and my handle on Instagram is gmoney5381 for anyone that's not on there. We also have the actual guide service page at Keystone Anglers Guide Service. We have a Instagram account on that too. So, yep.
So how'd you get into guiding?
I got into guiding 3 years ago. I honestly was thinking one day I was fishing and I was thinking about my three sons that I brought up in, you know, taught them how to fly fish and how well that they're doing in the field of fly fishing. And I was thinking that it was something that I might want to try to help other people do. I know sometimes people have the misconception of fly fishing is like this complex, difficult sport. And it really doesn't have to be that, you know, it's a pretty simple sport. And you can go out and if you know some of the techniques right off the bat, you can be successful and catch fish. So that's what kind of got it started, and it kind of morphed into this whole thing with the smallmouth and pike and muskie and pretty much any species you can chase with a fly rod. So that's kind of what we do. We do everything. So it's not just trout or steelhead. It's pretty much any species of fish in PA or basically Ohio or New York.
But speaking of steelhead, that's starting to pop off now, right?
Yeah, actually, I've been fishing for steelhead for the last 2 weeks, my person, you know, out scouting and just trying to see what's going on with the runs right now. And I just did my first couple trips this week, and everybody's had hookups. Not everybody's connected, you know, and landed fish. But, you know, some of the people we take are just learning how to fly fish. So when you hook up with a steelhead, they're a handful on a fly rod. So we landed some fish and we lost a bunch of fish too. So, but it's a good start for the season. We're looking forward to a long season of guiding people. So,
I seen you on one of the posts you posted. You'd walked a long way and talked about maybe needing a little bit of water in the creeks, and but you know, still out there doing it.
Yeah, it's the early season is really tough with water levels and stuff, especially in Pennsylvania. The creeks in PA need a lot of rain and stuff to get the water levels up, and it just takes a lot of legwork trying to find fishable water in PA. So we've been, the first couple trips I did so far, I've been in eastern Ohio, and we've had pretty decent water levels, but the clarity and stuff from this last batch of rain has got the water all muddied up and stuff. So my clients all had very good trips despite the muddy water conditions. So, yeah, that's part of the territory. You know, you got to walk to try to find good fishable water. That's part of it.
Since you're taking a lot of rookie clients fishing, are you fishing a lot of indies and beads? Or?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear what you said on that.
I'm sorry. Since you're taking a lot of newbies fishing, are you fishing indies and beads? Or are you fishing some sort of streamer? Or what's your preferred technique?
Technique-wise, honestly, the streamers with new clients, like, that are just picking up fly fishing, I like to use streamers a lot because the fish tend to hit them pretty good, you know, and when they hit them, they typically stay stuck, but we'll do pretty much anything fly-wise. I don't use beads personally. I know a lot of guys catch fish on beads, but, you know, I'm a natural fly guy. I use a lot of egg patterns and nuke eggs and traditional nymphs and stuff like that, like hare's ears and stone flies and stuff like that. So, but new people that are trying to learn the sport, streamers are the way to go, and they can fish them pretty much any way and be successful and hook up with fish and typically land them. So that's the route I normally take.
Do you find yourself changing that, you know, throughout the season even? You know, it seems now, you know, streamer fishing is probably a little more, you know, going to work better than, you know, nymphing later on in the season.
Yeah, typically towards the winter time, the fish get sluggish and they want a slower, softer presentation. So I'll start, you know, going to a natural, the more natural flies and eggs and stuff like that. Yeah, absolutely. Springtime, the fish will start converting back to being a little more aggressive, and we'll start using streamers again pretty heavily. And you really got to change to what the fish are looking for. So it's really feel, and you know the fish will tell you exactly what they're going to take. So,
with like the majority of your clients, are you getting a lot of like half day, full days, or are you getting to spend like a few days with them where you can take them around to different areas and different creeks?
Mostly most of my trips are all full days. I have like a couple right now that are half day trips that are guys, coming into the area for work, you know, other work related, situations. So, I'm taking guys out for half day trips that are just into the area for a day or two, which is great. I wish the fishing was a little bit better right now. We're just playing the whole waiting for rain game with the, you know, with these early season trips. But the fishing is going to pick up here in the next few weeks. The water's getting cold, and you know the rain's coming. So yeah, things are looking up.
Do you run into many of the big browns up on the Erie Tribs?
I don't. I try to fish up on the, especially the PA tribs. I fish kind of high up on the streams. I don't fish down towards the lake, and I don't think a lot of the bigger browns that they catch typically are caught up, you know, pretty high. I know there's a couple guys, Anthony Nicoletti, he catches some browns every season. He fishes down low quite a bit, but yeah, I don't. The biggest I ever caught was in the 20s on the browns and the Erie, PA tribs. But, you know, I know some guys catch some big ones and, you know, but I don't. So.
Yeah. Hey, you can't pick which fish you catch, you know?
I know. That's the thing. You know, you're drifting through runs that you don't know what's in there, and you can't really dictate what hits your fly.
Yeah, if you could pick them, we'd all pick 15-pounders all the time.
Exactly.
So, do you want to transition a little bit into some bigger fish with more teeth?
Yeah, absolutely. I love muskies. I mean, I'm a huge muskie lover, so that's my number one fish.
So, you fished a beefalo last week. How'd that turn out for you?
Horrible. I think we moved one fish in that crappy water that we were fishing for 2 days.
I tell you what, if it was bigger than 25 inches, you had us beat.
I know. It's ridiculous. I honestly, I had high expectations for that tournament. John Bentley and I fished it several times, and we had, I mean, every trip we were moving fish and having hookups, and, you know, I thought it was going to end up better than it did. But, hey, whatever. I give props to the dude that connected. My good friend Andrew Goodland, he caught the biggest fish in the weekend, and he's probably my biggest inspiration for getting me into the sport of fly fishing for muskie. So I'm proud of him and happy for everyone that caught fish. So.
On one of your pre-fishing trips, didn't you catch a big old gnarly pike?
I caught several pike on those trips. For some reason, the pike, they like to stay hooked when you hook them, and the muskie end up getting off it.
Oh, we know the feeling, brother.
Sometimes the muskies just drive me nuts, but, you know, it is what it is, and that's why I love fishing for them. They're a challenge, and, you know, I accept the challenge, and as frustrating as they are, I just love them to death, so.
You seem to musky fish way different than we do. We like standing in boats. You like standing on the bank.
I'm a wade fisherman. I fish a lot of tailwaters. I fish a lot of streams. I fish, you know, rivers. I like to be one-on-one with the fish, and a lot of the fish that I catch are, you know, a lot of those takes are like feet away from me, you know, and I'm in their element. I'm in with them, and that adds such a dimension to my flat and my musky fishing with flies. You know, I just, being in a boat, like, you know, it's fun and it's different and stuff like that. But I think, you know, especially in the rivers, when you're drifting, you're only getting like a short crack at some of these fish. And a lot of my bigger muskies that I catch are fish that, they're in areas that I've pounded for hours and hours and hours and hours. Finally, I get one to take, you know, like, you wouldn't get that with a drift boat, and, you know, there's something to be said about that, so.
So, with that, are you fishing, what, intermediate lines, sink tips, or, like, floaters?
Yeah, I'm intermediate, and, you know, in this, like, summertime and stuff, I go to a straight floating line, and I can get my fly down, you know, enough that I'm not getting hung up in a lot of brush and timber and stuff like that where I'm fishing, and it just stays up enough. And the fish, when they're hungry, they're coming up and hitting your fly. They don't give a crap if it's, you know, 2 feet under, 3 feet under, or 6 inches under. You know, they're hitting that fly. So it just works out better for me, you know, in the summertime using a floating line versus an intermediate or a full sink.
So do you get many fish to follow in? And if you do, are you able to do, like in a boat, we do a figure eight. Are you able to do some sort of maneuver?
It's hard. Honestly, it's really hard. I can't even give you a number. I get a ton of follows. But when you're in moving water, which a lot of people don't even fish for muskies in like a moving water situation, I get a lot of follows in that type of stuff, because I find that muskies, they're not afraid of being in moving water as long as they have a current break somewhere where they can hide behind, and they have no issues, you know, being in current. And I get a lot of fish move in that type of environment, but it screws me up for figure eight, because you can't figure eight through moving current. there's a give and take, and a lot of times you need the fish to really be hungry and want that fly, you know, to take it before, you know, you get fish to follow. You know, sometimes they're going to hit, sometimes they're not, but I like to get the fish that are hungry and they're going to hit, like, right away versus following it in and, like, looking at it, and they might want it, they might, you know, so.
I also see that you fish a lot of Tony's flies from Nightmare Musky Fly. Do you tie any of your own also?
I don't, no. I only started fly fishing for muskies. It's been since last July is when I started. So I really, honestly, I just got into it for the challenge. I mean, I've always been, you know, the trout and the steelhead, you know, the, like, kind of get lulled into that whole deal. And it's, you know, trout are fun, steelhead are fun, but they're not overly challenging. And, you know, like I said, Andrew Goodland, he got me kind of into that whole sport. And it was, I knew right from the start it was what the challenges I was looking for in my fly fishing career. And they, you know, they challenged me mentally and physically. And it's just, you know, that's what drives me to catch this fish. I mean, and, you know, I forget this.
So how was your transition from that style of fishing? I mean, did you streamer fish a lot before that for smallmouth or anything? Or
Yeah, I like throwing streamers for smallmouth. I'm not like I'm a nympher at heart, but I started opening up to the whole streamer thing.
You openly admit that?
Kind of, yeah. but the whole back to the tying the flies thing is, yeah, I'm a self-admitted newbie to the whole sport of fly fishing for muskies. So I just look at those flies and I like to tie flies, but I think I have ADHD because when I sit at a vise, I can't sit there and grind flies for hours. Like, I get my guide flies, my pheasant tails and hare's ears, I get them in bulk, and, you know, I don't have to sit there for an hour tying flies. You know, I'd rather be fishing. But Tony and, like, Dom Petrucci, those guys, they do a heck of a job tying flies, and for the price they charge me, I'd rather just pay them and get top-quality flies that I know they're going to move water and catch fish. I mean, the proof's in the pudding. Their flies catch fish, so...
We're on the internet. We're allowed to say they do a hell of a job.
All right, they do a hell of a job.
Because they do. Those two dudes, and they're two of the nicest dudes in fly fishing.
They are. They're freaking awesome. I love both those guys.
Yeah. So, do you get many big smallmouth or big pike to eat while you're musky fishing these moving waters?
Yeah, absolutely. In the northerns, I mean, muskies hit as common as northerns, we'd all be happy. I mean, the northerns are just so eager to hit flies. I mean, they're awesome fish. But they're kind of a nuisance when you're trying to fish for muskies. I mean, you guys know when you're out for a muskie, anything other than a muskie is a letdown. And I hate to admit that, but that's the case. So, but yeah, we catch a bunch of northerns and, you know, smallmouth. You know, I know on the Allegheny a bunch of times on our pre-fishing, John Bentley and I, we had a bunch of big smallmouth follow our musky flies in, but I never pulled one in the Allegheny. A couple of the other places like lakes and stuff like that, I've caught big smallmouth, big largemouth on musky flies, and, you know, they are what they are. You get a picture of them and you toss them in, you're not too happy about them. But
you got a giant largemouth. Who was that thing, about 10 pound?
No, it was, I think it was 7.2. I think, I'm not 100% sure. My son put it on the scale and I think it was 7.2, but I caught that up in somewhere up north of Mansfield, Pennsylvania. We were on a lake. A funny story. He's fishing for bass with spinner baits. I'm fishing for muskies with 12-inch game changers. I'm catching all the bass. He's catching all the muskies.
That's how it goes.
Oh my God! He caught three or four tiger muskies that weekend. I caught a bunch of smallmouth and that big largemouth. So
we got to christen you into the fishing club, man. If someone says, did you catch a 10-pound bass? He's like, yep. At least that's what I do.
I know. I'd like to fit, but I'm not.
So with your muskie, like you said, you like to sit and kind of camp on them and beat away at them. Are you essentially...
No, let me interrupt you. I said that's what has happened. I didn't say that I enjoy sitting there. Over and over and over and over.
Yeah, I get you. So I guess, yeah, that kind of is part of the question that you answered there. Are you kind of going to one area and staying through there, or are you picking a couple different spots and hitting two or three during the day and spending 4 or 5 hours at one?
Well, what it is and again, I'm going back to Andrew, my boy Andrew. He, you know, he's the one that helped with finding some of these areas, and, you know, he threw gear originally, and so I pressured him into doing straight fly fishing. But a lot of times, the gear is going to move fish sometimes that the flies don't. So if you go into an area and, you know, you're using glide baits and stuff like that, you can get fish to move. As long as you find where the fish are, then you know where to put your time in, and you can just grind the heck out of them until they finally hit. And that's exactly what some of the areas that, you know, I've been successful catching big muskies are areas that, you know, he's moved fish with gear, or, you know, I've moved fish with flies. Or once you know where they're at in a river system, if you put your time in, you're going to eventually be successful, you know, and you might have to wait for, you know, full moon and get, you know, things right and the weather system pushing in and, you know, the fish are a little bit eager to hit. But, you know, these fish, the muskies are really, they're tailored to me because I'm a stubborn SOB, and, like, you know, if they're not hitting, I'm going to cast freaking more, you know, I'm going to cast more and I'm going to put more time in to catching them, you know, and eventually it's going to work out for me. So I don't get discouraged by them not hitting. As long as I know there's an area, I'm going to freaking put the time into doing it. So
if you are putting the time into an area, is there something that you feel triggers them, like a moon phase or something to that effect? Or
I charted all, I've caught in my first year, I caught 13 muskies in my first, I think it was 13 months. So I'm almost on a month average. And I've charted all those fish, and I charted Andrew's fish, trying to look for a pattern on that, the full moon and, you know, this and that. And they basically hit whenever the hell they want it.
Don't we know it?
You know what's funny? I've done the same thing with, like, all Chad's fish, and any person that's been on my boat that's caught my own fish. So, I mean, there's probably 20 logged in there. The only thing that I have found close to any constant was the zenith. That was it. Especially a full moon zenith, that overhead, like 1 o'clock or 1:15, is the only thing that I've ever seen consistent with any of them.
I know, and the funny thing is, like, how many people you see fishing in the middle of the day for any? Nobody. I'm gonna say the majority of my fish were all caught from 12 to 2 o'clock.
Without looking
at my logs, I mean that's regardless of the moon phase. Like, they just hit when, you know. And
it's lunchtime.
Yep, and it's exactly the same thing I'm seeing too. And even our fish at the Beast, it was right around then when we moved it.
106.
Yeah. Well, 106. It was a 107 zenith. That's right, because I looked at it after.
Absolutely. I mean, I didn't move a fish in the Beast, so I didn't have to look at the fish.
You stuck a monster walleye.
I would have traded that walleye for a 20-some-inch muskie.
For an equal-sized muskie.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'd have traded the sore shoulder for the 30-inch walleye, though. So what did you guys? You're on a Hog Island jet, huh?
Yeah, it was a good, nice boat. I mean, we it was the perfect boat for fishing that tournament. I mean, we're mobile, we could move around, but I just don't like that fast high water. I mean,
did you have cowboy boots on with the jeans?
Shut up. I had freaking Timberlands on, bro. That's what you wear on a boat.
Oh, man, that's great. That's awesome.
Hey, I was barefoot the whole time in a boat.
Yeah.
Were you? It was pretty chilly to be barefoot. I mean,
I did not bring a pair of shoes to the Beast. I brought one pair of flip-flops, and that was it.
I know. John Bentley is normally, he's a... shorts and he wears gym shorts and flip flops, so he was out of his element in that little bit colder weather. So
with the guide service, is any of the your other guides guiding for Muskie, or is that just you pretty much?
That's me right now. John Bentley, we're trying to get him established too, and he has a nice jet boat and he's got a drift boat and stuff, so we're trying to get him established too in the Muskies. Mike Beach, I don't know if you guys know Steelhead Mike's Flies. Are you familiar with him?
Not right off the top of our heads.
Yeah, he's getting into Muskies too. He ties up some really nice flies, and he's getting into the Muskies. So, yeah, we're trying to kind of branching out and trying to get that established, you know. It's a tough, the Muskie thing is tough because, you know, like, a lot of people don't do it, so it's kind of hard to get, you know, people into it. And, you know, everybody likes steelhead and the trout, and but muskies don't get any love from most people, so it's a short niche of trying to get clients to come and do it. So, but we'll make it work. Trust me, we're working hard. So
I'm sure we will work our way back to muskie. But I want to ask you something. You keep mentioning trout. Do you offer guides for or guiding for trout?
I absolutely do. I do Central PA. I do a lot of mine on Spring Creek over Belfont, Milesburg area, Little Juniata River. I don't know if you guys know where that's at, over in Blair and Huntington County. That's my main two. And then I got some secret spots that I only take certain clients to. So
you want to say that over the air?
I ain't going to say that on the internet.
Yep.
Do you drive that back and forth, or do you have a place you stay at when you go there then?
Well, I grew up in over right around Altoona. That's okay. Where I grew up. My parents live over there, so I'm fortunate to have a place to crash. My son, who is a he's an assistant biologist for the Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission. He lives in Milesburg, which is over by Belfont, and I can stay over with him whenever I get trips on Spring Creek. So I'm fortunate to have lodging pretty much anywhere where I got.
So you put your son up for long enough, now he's putting you up.
Exactly. You got to utilize your kids.
That's right.
But so yeah, I love the trout. The trout are fun. I mean, the wild trout are nice for when you're teaching people to fly fish, because they can be real successful, you know. The as long as you present a fly in a decent manner, the wild trout are going to hit it. So they're nice for taking newbies out and teaching them the ropes, and they can catch fish, and, you know, it's fun. I enjoy the wild trout fishing.
So what's your preferred method there? Is you still in a nymph, or you do a lot of dry fly then?
Well, it all depends on the water. Spring Creek, we do a lot of dry fly dropper type technique. We do nymphing. We'll do streamers. I got certain clients that are strictly streamer people. It's really, you know, it's up in the air on what we do on that. But
and out there, it's the big three. They're all wild, right? Rainbows, browns, and brookies.
We on like Spring Creek, it's all wild browns. There's some rainbows. I mean, the rainbows, they're kind of stocked in there occasionally. We call them wild just because they've been in the stream so long. So whether they're technically, you know, wild or not, but I don't know the answer to that. But they're, you know, they're wild enough that they're a blast on flag.
Is that a tech? Would your son, the biologist, approve of wild enough?
I never asked him. I should ask him what the proper term is for this. But I mean, they're a blast, man. They fight, especially in the Little J. They fight like big time in that bigger water, and you know, it is what it is. They're just a fun fish.
The Little J is a pretty good smallie river, also, isn't it?
Not really. Honestly, I've been fishing it since I was a kid, and I don't think I've ever caught a smallmouth in that. I'm trying to think. No, I've never caught a smallie in the Little J.
The now, big J has them, don't they?
Yeah, the normal J has it, and like you get down to the lower.
The normal J.
you hit it where the Little J hits the normal J, like in the Frankstown area, and you'll get some smallies. Like that lower Frankstown branch to the Juniata, I've caught smallies in there, and you know. But the regular J, it just gets too, or the Little J, it just gets too cold. You know, I think that limestone water, you know, it's just too cold up in the upper reaches to really have a decent population of smallmouth. I'm not saying there's none out there, but you know, it is what it is. But if you want smallies, the regular Juniata has a ton of them. So
the normal J is what our co-host Jason likes the best.
No, really?
Yes.
Hey, I know. I actually caught a muskie in the regular J when I was a kid. So
really.
Yep. on regular gear, so that doesn't count. I don't count any of the regular gear fish into my 13 that I caught. So.
Did you start gear fishing for them, or did when you started musky fishing, it was just on the fly?
Well, honestly, I had a buddy that he was a big bass fisherman, and we would fish Raystown Lake quite a bit, and we were all, into the bass, and there were so many times him and I are like plugging the shoreline, and I'd see this 4 foot, it would look like a log up in, a foot of water, and I'd throw my saltwater plug or something at it, and this thing would take, explode on it and hit my lure, and I'd have it hooked for a minute and then bring back a bare line. I'd be like, what the heck? So that's kind of what got me, realizing what musky and predator fish were all about. I mean, I didn't specifically ever get hardcore into predator fishing back then, but it always piqued my interest. I was always finding it interesting what these toothy fish were all about. But I think I caught 4 or 5 of them when I was younger, just by accident fishing for bass and stuff like that. But I kind of lost interest when I got into regular fly fishing and fishing for trout and doing that whole gig. You kind of get specific on those, and it's just, I'm telling you, a year or so ago, Andrew was telling me about these muskies he's fishing for, and I just needed a challenge in my fly fishing game, and they just fit the bill perfectly. I had my first follow, and I was like addicted from right there. I'm like, I'm catching one of these things on a fly. I don't care if it kills me, and it almost did kill me. you guys know the feeling. I mean, there's nothing that compare to catching a big muskie on the fly. I don't care what you're fishing for. I mean, trout don't do it, steelhead don't do it, pike don't do it, smallmouth don't do it, but it's special. I mean, you get one of them things that hit a fly, you're doing something good. So
do you have any plans to go back to Raystown and try to connect with one of those big 4 foot logs on the fly?
Raystown, not, I mean, in the back of my head I think about Raystown. I mean, but no, not really. Raystown's big. There's a lot of water there.
It's just huge. Much
wasting time. But I am, next weekend, I'm going to be guiding in central PA for trout. So I'm definitely going up to that Kalineski Lake with my son for a day. And I'm going to try to get revenge. I had two big, probably 4 footers right at boat side that I kind of screwed up on and lost. So I'm going up to get a little revenge, hopefully, on those. So I'm definitely going to get into the lake here in the next week. So
do you do much at lake around here?
No, I don't know. I've been wanting to go hit like Pymatuming. I heard there's some really big muskies in there, but I haven't hit the lakes now.
Pymatuming muskies just run right down the road from you.
Where?
You know where.
I don't know where.
We'll tell you off air. But yeah, if you go to Pymatuming, shit, you're passing us. So definitely we'll hit us up.
I'll hit you up, definitely. I'm game for I'm game for any musky fishing. I just love doing it, so.
Yeah, there's a lot of good water around here.
Yeah, there is. I'm not gonna I'm trying not to name any.
But no, we don't need to spot burn anything because we're only about 40 minutes apart, if that.
That's why I keep getting tongue tied, because I keep getting ready to drop a couple, and I'm like.
Well, the Erie Tribs isn't a big deal. Everybody knows about that. I mean, crying out loud, it's shoulder to shoulder up there. There's,
yeah.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah, it's crazy. The Erie Tribs are.
But in all reality, all of our water local here is either stocked lake-wise, and at some point some's got to get through, or most of them are stocked river-wise. And the ones that aren't stocked river-wise are all have musky populations in them, so somewhere at some point they're coming up out of the lower part of them or what have you. And
yeah.
Everything around us has musky in it.
I know, and listen, there's, you guys know and I know, there's ways of figuring out where there's muskies. I mean, I'm not going to blow it up right now, but, you know, and that's part of the issue with trying to guide for muskies in some of these waters that, you know, there's some people that want to go fishing just to learn where there's fish, and then, you know, they're going to pay their fee and that's it, you know, and they're going to blow it up and take their buddies. You know, it's a game. I have to kind of be careful where I take people, you know.
Well, and I think that's too kind of like same boat for us here. And I think really what you have to do in that scenario, I mean, I know a lot of people ain't going to appreciate this, is there's going to be muskies in the area, but it's going to be a pretty standard area.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, everybody knows Lake Arthur, and everybody knows there's muskies in it, but you can learn how to cast a fly. You can learn how to fish. You got a good shot of catching a muskie, but it isn't going to be that one spot where you know you can bank out and pull a 48 out. Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, well, that goes back to me getting a drift boat, because you go up on the river, you know what I mean? It's a vast river. You know, you're eliminating a lot of that type of clientele, you know, going up on a river and randomly finding a ski that, you know, is here or there. You know, I go to my specific areas, and it's, you know, that's my specific areas, and you're going to know exactly where the damn fish are.
Well, and I think another tough thing, too, for you with walk and wade guiding is, I know a lot of the areas we fish, if you're not well adapted to casting a musky fly, you're going to hate life, because you're pinpointing in between 2 and 3 foot holes in trees trying to make your cast through, and, you know, slinging them up and down the banks over top of down trees and snagging all the time. It's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, and that's a mild area, if you want to know the truth. I got areas, there's a ton of muskies that you can't get a bass cast in anywhere, you know, like, but you got to make it happen one way or another.
Have you ever thought of swinging for them? Getting a two-handed rod?
Yeah.
And roll casting it across it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
It's yep, like, absolutely.
You know, but those areas, out of the 13 fish I caught, I probably caught six or seven of them, you know, like, that is where they're at. Like, you know, that, you can't take everybody to a place like that, because, you know, yeah, everyone wants to catch a muskie on a fly, but not everyone can throw a muskie fly in a tight spot like that.
So. Well, the million-dollar question is, do you find in them areas, them fish are more susceptible and they're easier, or they're at least more willing to eat because they haven't been pressured?
Honestly, those fish, I'll move a lot more. They don't always hit a lot more often, you know what I mean? They're more, you know, I get a lot of followers in that type of scenario in the smaller waters, but they're not always hitting your flies, and I don't know the reason behind it, but I also know those areas, you know, that they, around full moons, you go there at daybreak, and you're catching the damn muskies. It's like, you know, I don't know, like, that's the beauty of this sport, is they hit when they want to hit. I mean, you want to put the time in and fish as much as we do for them and catch one, you know, like, you can luck out and go, you know, maybe catch one on your first time doing it, but to consistently catch these things, it takes time and it takes determination and it takes, you know, mental strength to be able to do it, because you can be mentally defeated really easy. And I've been to the brink before, and, you know, you guys, I'm sure, have been there, and, you know, we all want to catch them, but you got to put your time and effort into it, you know, and that's what I love about them, you know.
You said something a little bit ago that had me thinking. You said some people hire you as a guide to just want to learn a spot. Have you ever, like, say, steelhead fishing, taken someone and then a week later went to take another person and that guy's in your spot?
Steelhead is what it is. You know, I get a lot of clients that are from out of the area, and they hire me because they can't monitor the water situation. They can't monitor the run situation, you know, so they don't care. Like, they're coming into the area just to make sure they're in fish, you know?
Yeah.
The steelhead aren't, no, I don't have that with steelhead. No, I just, my biggest fear is, and worry is, the muskie. Like,
so you haven't had that happen?
No, I haven't had it happen at all. Everyone that I've taken for pretty much steelhead, I get hired back every year. You know, they want put on fish and they want to know where the run are. And they, you know, it's just, they trust me. You know, I do a good job for them and they rehire me, and that's the name of the game. I mean, you know, earning people's trust is the biggest part of this. So
if someone does hire you for a day, what do they expect? What's a day with Scott look like?
The day is we start, like, I don't have, number one, I don't do 4 and I don't do 6 or 8 hour trips. My days, like, you poke a full day with me, we're doing daybreak till you're done or it's pitch black out and we can't fish anymore. That's my full day. Like, I don't, like, I can't see you fishing, you know, and you're either catching a bunch of fish and I have to stop you, oh, your time's up, or you're not catching any, oh, sorry, you're done, let's go, you know. To me, that's bull crap. You know, you're out there to catch fish no matter what, and we're catching fish, or we're going to try to catch fish until there's no more daylight to be able to do that. You know, that's my philosophy, and, you know, guys want to make their dollar and freaking get off the stream, you know, in their 6 or 8 hour trip, and I don't agree with that. I'm out there to put my clients on fish, and we're going to fish till they're done or it's dark. So that's my day.
And you guys are expecting to put a ton of miles on your wading boots?
I don't want to, but... That's what we're doing right now, it seems like. I'm walking a shitload of miles.
So what does your clients have to bring with them, or what do you provide?
I provide pretty much everything. I have extra chest waders, but honestly, if you could have waders, I have backup rods for up to 4 or 5 fishermen, you know. I have all the flies. I have pretty much everything we need to get out there and get after some steelies or trout. Now, the muskies are a whole different ballgame. I try to keep my muskie clients to one fisherman. I have an 11-weight H3 and a 12-weight H3. I only have 2 good muskie setups right now. And some of this water, you don't want more than 1, maybe 2 guys hitting it, you know, because they're hard enough to catch 1, let alone 2 fishermen. So, you know, I try to keep that to 1 fisherman, because then that just ups the odds of possibly catching a fish. But, you know, the steelhead and trout, I can, you know, I do up to 4 people myself, and, you know, we have other guides that'll do trips too. So, you know, we have pretty much everything you need other than, you know, the waders, which I have waders on hand, but you can't have every size of waders on hand for clients. So, but that's it, yeah.
With the muskie, will you fish with the guys?
No.
Like, to show them how to cast, or to show them, set them up for a cast, or?
Well, my muskie clients are all accomplished. The people that I've taken before are all accomplished fly anglers.
Okay.
They know the deal. I mean, they know how to cast flies. None of my trips I ever fish. I know. I just think that's the biggest crock of crap when a guy fishes with their client. I mean, you're there for them. You know, it's their day. They're paying you for them to catch fish, not you. Like, I will never, ever fish with my clients. Never, so.
Okay. That's kind of the going for how it goes. I just didn't know.
Yeah.
Because I listen to a muskie podcast, and they fish, but, like, they're gear guys, so it's weird.
Yeah, they're weird right off the bat.
You know, it's weird, the difference between the mentality.
Yeah, they're Neanderthals, and we're just
down. We're refined. Believe it?
Oh, yeah, I know it.
So... If someone comes with you, they need to bring food for the day for themselves?
Yeah, that's the only thing. Like, if you can bring your own snack and stuff, you know, like, we let the day is basically what the client wants, okay? If they want to some clients I've had where they want to fish, and then at lunch they want to get out of their waders and go grab something to eat. You know, some clients, they want to fish throughout the day, and I'm prepared, and the other guys, they're all prepared to do whatever the heck the client wants to do. We don't care. We're out there from daybreak till dark, no matter what. So, yeah, the food's the only thing they got to bring, and appropriate clothing. So,
and in PA, you're fishing all public water?
Yep, all public water. We don't do any private water. I mean, the steelhead, there's absolutely no reason that you should have to ever fish private water. The steelhead are everywhere.
Yeah, for sure.
As long as there's water, I mean, in the streams, I mean, you should be able to put your clients on fish no matter what. That's just asinine that you need to have private water to catch steelhead.
Hell yeah, I'm totally with you.
It's ridiculous. And I'll just keep
them off. Okay. We'll stop her right there. Streamer wise, if you're going streamer fishing for a steelhead, are you you gonna swing or are you stripping?
Both? It all depends. Like when I was free fishing, DM5th wanted my streamer drifted. They wouldn't hit it, any other way. But I've also had it to where they wouldn't hit it unless you were stripping it. You know, like, you got to kind of feel what the fish want that particular day. And that's one thing about the steelhead. They're finicky, and they take things in certain manners, and but they tell you exactly what they're going to want by them taking it, So you got to kind of feel them out, and, that's... I wish there was a foolproof answer saying that they do something specific, but they really don't. It's like really what they want that day.
Last week at the Beast, Mark and I were trying our best to figure out what the fish wanted. We'd go slow, we'd go fast, we'd double hand strip, and they weren't telling us shit.
Join the club.
I know.
Yeah. But absolutely nothing.
Do you get any of the on the double hand strip?
No, I don't double hinge. I got my system down for my strips, and I do. That's what I do. John Bentley and Eric McClellan, those two, they were doing double hand strip a bunch. So I just let them do their thing, and I did my thing, and neither one works. It really didn't matter. If they would have moved any fish doing their thing, I probably would have switched, but. No, I kind of have my stripping technique, and that's what I do, and I've been kind of successful doing it that way, and that's not saying it's right all the time, but, I don't know. I know specifically my bigger fish in the wintertime, I use 12-inch game changers or T-bones, and I do like a dead drift almost, like I'm fishing for trout. And I get a lot of dead drifted takes, without any strips at all. So,
really?
Yeah, there's absolutely something to that in the wintertime,
So you throw a big stack men's in, and like you're trout fishing?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I do. I dead drift it, and, I almost like a little swing at the end, and they hit right on that swing.
That's mind-blowing.
I hope I didn't give too much info out. Now you guys will be out there banging big 50s every winter time.
Oh, we are. We're definitely going to come. We're gonna find your spot.
The funny thing, I do that a lot in the winter, like on banks and what have you, but I've only, just come to think of it, I have had one eat down on the lower swing.
And in the wintertime, they're in that little, they're in the deeper water, they're just sitting there, and I think what it is something just happens to cross their face that's appealing, they're gonna hit it,
I think one difference is though, like you said, you use an inner or a floater line in the winter, correct?
No, the winter time I'm going to the intermediate, summertime I'm using a floating line.
Okay, but you're still not using a full sink or anything though?
No, because a lot of the water I fish, I'd be pulling snags. I'm already pulling snags out with the intermediate, like, way too much. So, but they're not going to come up and hit something like 6 inches under the surface when you're using a floating line versus, you know, the intermediate, you're still getting down enough that it's in their strike zone. They have to have that fly, like, somewhere in the vicinity of their face to take it, you know, and they're not going to come up to the surface. So, and you really got to tailor it to the water that you're fishing. You know, a lot of the places I fish, you get waist-deep water. That's a deep hole, and that's where the muskies are going to be. My intermediate line sinks, you know, 3/4 of the way down in that type of situation, and that's right where the fish are at. You know, you use a floating line in the summertime, that's only going down about 6 to 8 inches, but when they're aggressive, guess what? They're coming up and hitting that fly. They don't care, you know. When a muskie's hungry, it's hitting whatever the hell it wants to hit if it's anywhere in the vicinity of it, you know. That's the reality. That's what they do. They're apex predators, you know.
You've said hungry like 3 times tonight. Are they hungry or are they just freaking aggressive? Do they just
know? I think it's all hunger, you know. I've had aggressive fish follow my flies in before and not hit it.
Okay.
When they're hunt, like, in, especially in the wintertime, there's only windows that they're going to feed. You know, they're hitting big food that's going to give them the maximum amount of energy and, you know, whatever the hell it is that they want. You know, they're hitting it out of hunger. They're not hitting it out of aggressive. They're not aggressive in the wintertime. They're definitely feeding for energy and for sustenance, you know. And they're like, I don't know how many of the bigger ones that I caught, but all my big fish were all caught in that wintertime period, and I know damn well they're feeding because of, you know, hunger and, you know, being able to survive the winter with, you know, the food that they're eating. So I definitely go all big flies in the wintertime. I mean, even in the spring, I caught a big one in the spring that I caught on big flies, and I, against my better wishes or my own mindset, I still grinded on big flies through the early spring and the early summertime, you know, even though I knew I should have probably downsized. But I don't know. I just think a big fly, I'm after big fish. I ain't after mid to high 30s fish. I'm into 40 plus. So if I don't catch as many fish, but the bites I get are big ones, I'm happy with that trade-off, you know.
So one thing we haven't discussed is color. What's your go-to, or what are you, you know, what are you starting off? Are you basing off of skies and water? And
my colors.
Yeah, yeah.
Fly colors, no, dude. I pick my fly colors off of what I think the fish are going to hit, and they love friggin' perch, and they love firecrackers. You know, that's their, I mean, I caught the majority of my fish on those colors. Perch, Tony for perch, and his fire tiger, two top flies, and I catch the majority of my fish on that. Dom's, I caught a bunch of fish on his sucker. It's like a sucker carp color on his T-bone. Beautiful freaking fly. That thing just comes to life in the water. I caught a bunch of fish on that. Dom's white T-bone, I caught a bunch, you know, a few fish on that, a lost fish on that, like, just natural baits, you know, like, people tend to overthink their musky flies and get too crazy, but they're, you know, musky and pike, they eat a shitload of perch, so why deviate off of that color, you know, like.
I think pressure may have a lot to do with that, though, too.
Yeah.
Think about, like, if your area was hit daily by people, it wouldn't be quite as easy, would it?
Probably not, but I think it goes back to a lot of guys, even in a high-pressure situation, guys aren't locked into doing what it takes to consistently catch a muskie. Like, they'll get down through an area, oh, yeah, this looks nice, they'll hit it a couple times, and they move on because they didn't catch anything. You know what I mean? Like, that fit, the fish that are in that spot get hit 2 hours later, you know, like, I'm telling you that people don't have, most people don't have the gumption to commit to catching a muskie. Like, it, you know, they want instant success, and it's not the fish to get into if that's what you want. Like, they, you know, you got to grind on them. Like, they turn on and off, and if you're there throwing your flies when they're on, you're going to catch one. You know, you go into an area and you put an hour or two in and you don't catch one, you're going to get bored and leave, you know, or go somewhere else. Like, that's the biggest thing I can tell people that are getting into it, is just, you got to put your time in, that's all.
So what you're saying is a muskie that's going to hit 2 hours into you fishing, it's just getting a hunger pang?
I think. when they feel like they're going to, listen, you got, I'm telling you, I've caught fish. Like, here's a classic example. Andrew and I were hitting this area. We knew there was fish in. We caught fish here before. I went down, I caught one, like, right away. Him and I pounded this area for at least 5 hours, 6 hours. Okay, it's getting an hour before dark. We're still pounding it. Boom, I catch one. That fish, I guarantee, that I caught saw our flies 5 hours prior, but it didn't hit, you know, and then all of a sudden it, like, there's no other explanation that they just all of a sudden decide that they're hungry and they're going to hit, you know, like.
The football game's getting ready to come on. They got to go pick up a pizza, right?
Yeah, they're just like people, you know, like, you know, you want to eat when you want to eat, not when someone's trying to feed you, you know?
I hear you. So, hey, Scott, is there anything that we haven't hit on that you want to hit on?
Not really. I think I pretty much talked way too much tonight and gave you too much interest.
Hey, that's what we're here for. We're here to mine it from you.
No, I mean, I told you everything.
Yeah, if you could just send the GPS coordinates later, that'd be fine.
I'm sending them right now, brother. All right.
So, hey, stick on the line after we're done, but do you want to hit your plugs up one more time? Where can people find you? Where can people book you is the big one, and see what you're up to.
Yeah, my personal Instagram is gmoney5381, and we also have the Keystone Anglers Guide Service. That's where all of our clients' pictures, and occasionally our, you know, scouting pictures, will throw some on there. It's Keystone Anglers Guide Service, and we're at KeystoneAnglersGuideService.com is our website, and you can contact us through that. There's a contact email thing, and I get all the emails, and other than that, I think we're on Twitter, too. Yeah, we're on Twitter and Facebook and all that happy stuff, so anyone could contact us through that, and, you know, we're happy to hook anyone up, and even, like, right now, I got people up in that hit me up. I'm up in Erie right now. I'm going to be up here for the next 2 months grinding on some steel, so I always help people out with stream conditions and, you know, try to give helpful info, even if you're not going to book a trip through us. You know, I'm always happy to help people out, so hit us up. We're always here for you.
I've always been curious about the guide's life. Does your wife come up and visit you while you're in Erie, or do you go home?
My wife hates me, so she just doesn't even care. She don't care if I'm up here or not, as long as I send money back. I'm joking. No, she does. She calls me and stuff, so.
Are you alive? Is the check coming? Yes. Okay. Good night. Oh, my. Hey, we appreciate you taking the time on tonight. You know, you got a busy schedule, so, I mean, thanks for your time, and it was fun talking to you.
I get a day off tomorrow, so I'm excited. I'm going to maybe sleep in till about 6 and maybe go hit up a trib and scout it a little bit.
Couldn't have made it Tuesday, huh?
Ma'am, I got a trip Tuesday, so I got to get back at it and walk about 9 miles. So.
Fun. Well, hey, we will catch you later, buddy.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right, that was Scott Grassi. Man, he was a cool dude.
That was fun. That was a good time. Great guide.
And a great fisherman. Knowledge.
Yep.
So, yeah. And I think we just set up, we might go fishing with him. So.
Yeah, we really only live maybe less than
40 minutes.
Yeah, maybe 40, 45 minutes apart. So we frequent a lot of the same water, just obviously on different days.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to make it happen on the same day.
With my job now, I have, you know, Tuesdays off. So I get one day during the week. I can usually go somewhere and not have to mess with anybody, which is nice.
Yeah.
And then Sundays, it's usually you and I or Jay, and we go to areas that no one else is going to. So it's seldom we run into people, but we do. I mean, we talk about it a lot. We have a lot of water here. It's not the area that it's like, it's great in this, it's great in that, it's great in this. It's not great in anything, but if you put the time in, it really is, because there's good fish. There's real good fish.
It's good at a lot, not great at any.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you have different sections of, I don't know, what, 8 or 10 different, I mean, we have probably, what, 6 to 8 different bodies of water that all have outflows that flow into a river system, that really you have tailwaters in a river of all of that that you can fish, along with a lake.
Yeah.
All within a 2-hour drive. Yeah. If not more than that, I'd probably understate it, 6 or 8. There's probably more like 10 or 12.
Yeah, probably.
Because how many make up the Army Corps? What is it, like 16 that make up Army Corps, and only maybe 3 of them or 4 of them are a little ways away. Everything else is reasonable.
That, man, for some reason, they've been keeping the rivers fishable. The lakes?
Well, we haven't had a ton of rain this year either.
Nah. It was spotty.
It was heavy, and it ran through quick. Yeah. It wasn't soakers. It was just straight downpours, which just blew right through.
We didn't have the issue that central Pennsylvania did.
No.
Because they got it all. They got it all.
Crushed.
But yeah, we've been
fairly lucky.
Relatively fishable. Not so much good for the farmers, but good for the fishermen.
Yeah, it blew up.
So, you've been tying some flies. What you've
been tying quite a bit.
Just a couple.
Yeah, it'd be kind of fun to see. First set going for trout.
I can't wait to see that.
Yes, I'm excited. Big browns, bows, and bull trout.
And bulls, yeah.
So that'd be kind of cool.
You should have tied one that looks like a little cutthroat. Because that's what bull trout eat, from what I've heard.
Yeah. He had a specific set he wanted, and they turned out good. So that'd be kind of cool to see.
Yeah.
I never used them for muskie and pike, and obviously smallmouth crush them. Coming from a largemouth.
Were those ones we photographed today?
Yeah. Yep, and then did a double, too, for one of our buddies, Nick. So
that came out pretty all right.
Oh, yeah. That looked a little creamsicle.
That looked like the fly that we fished at the Beast.
That's what he wanted, was one of them.
I want this. Except
the two-toned head instead of the all-white head. He said, you do white and orange, but... No, all in all, is thanks for everybody who reached out to me. It was a busy week. Put 50 hours in a regular job and more than half of that in tying. I tied about 30 hours this week, Monday through Friday alone, and a little bit on Saturday. And took today for bucktails, but in 5 days, it was a lot. So it was nice.
I'm glad you did that, because I tied 3 flies this week. Oh. And they were itsy-bitsy flies.
I tied a bit.
I watched Gunner's video.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of that, Gunner is going to be on here two weeks?
The 28th, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, Gunner will be back on the 28th.
But he had a video, he had a little deceiver, and I guess that's what he's fishing down in the Amazon. He just wanted to go, he's going to have a series of simple to tie, effective deer hair flies.
Well, that's like I said, I mean, always the first fly ties, always a window licker. Everyone never fails. It's just getting the proportion of the bucktail right in your fingers to know just what you want to do with the fly. And I mean, I know a lot of flies because bucktail is so different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the nice thing, like what we're doing today with these tails, is just trying to source them all ourselves. So I'm able to hand touch every tail before I use it, before I dye it, before anything.
Yeah.
It's just, we're running into a lot of issues. Is you just can't, I mean, some places only have one length, certain sizes. Well, I don't need all that. And I'm cutting off a lot of the good that builds the bulk of the fly for the tips. You know, because it's only, I only need it 2.5-3 inches long at that part of the fly, but the whole bucktail's 5 to 7 inches.
Yeah.
So now being able to have more and different grades is going to go a long way with that, too.
Funny story about our bucktails today. We put them in a pillowcase, threw them in our dryer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the pillowcase came untied.
Oh, yeah. Deer hair everywhere.
Don't tell my wife. Yeah.
Oh, but where I was going with that was, now I completely lost train of thought. The first fly I tie every night, I'm doing like a, either like a mini spun head or a hollow fly or a bulk head or something like that. Just to, sure. Thank you. Just to get things kind of going, get the feel for it, to feel for what colors I'm using and how the bucktail is, because they're all different.
Yeah.
And they are. I mean, the hollow flies are just, I mean, if it's stripers, if it's smallmouth, if it's the pike and the pickerel and the small streams, everything eats them. It looks like a bait fish. So just tie whatever color you're looking to match in there, something's going to eat it.
Yeah.
Always.
I cannot stand throwing hollow flies. I don't know why.
Oh, I love them. You know why I love them? Because it was the first thing I tied when I got to predator fishing for pike.
Yeah.
The first thing I learned to tie was a hollow fly. It was the first fly I caught a pike on, and it's really what started the whole streamer game for me.
I will say this. When we had the Deer Hair King on here, I will not tell him I despise hollow flies.
I hope not.
But I really do. Don't get me wrong.
I'm going to sit back down. I think I'm going to do that this week one night.
Bulkheads, deceivers, all that stuff I love.
I'm going to sit back down and go through his book again.
Yeah.
Because I did this spring with smallmouth. I want to start working on just different stuff. Because, I mean, that's one thing I want to do with this is I don't want to just copy everybody's stuff. And I know it's hard to do, and everybody does the same. But I want to offer a lot of different variations of flies. So it may be just one fly, but it may be five or six different flies.
Yeah.
Whether it be different head styles, different tail styles, something to serve a different purpose of it.
Like that goofy fly you and me were talking about earlier today with the tail and
exactly. And the weight. I mean, there's a lot of ideas that, you know, we throw around back and forth. They're just different. But, I mean, like the fly that's laying in my truck, I mean, or I brought with us today.
The man in the boat.
Yep. And that's going to eventually be released here at some point. But the nice part about that is there's ultimately six variations of that fly.
Mm-hmm.
Deer hair to counterbalance it, and the thing swims just like a glide bait. That's where I'm working now, is what to use for the head. That one's ice dub. I've done laser dub. I've done a few different dubbing heads with it. With the weight, then it cuts through, it gets deeper, and it jigs. Well, then you throw a wiggle tail on the back of it instead of the feathers. Now you add that drag weight, and now the thing swims a little differently. It doesn't jig.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different options with just one fly. And then the nice thing is that fly I can tie in 4-inch, the hoy up to 7/8-inch. So you can use it for smallies and trout the whole way up to pike and muskie.
Yes.
And like we were just talking to Scott about, springtime, that was kind of a little after the fact.
Yeah, it was.
springtime, there's a lot of time we're using 2 to 4-inch flies for muskie in the spring. And that's one thing that we found and we learned from the walleye guys catching muskies is 1.5-inch sonars.
Yeah.
If they're catching 1.5-inch sonars, send an 1.5-inch minnow down there.
Yeah.
If it's hitting that, you jig it up, and guess what? It worked. They hit it.
Yeah.
But when it's, you know, them days, we're only able to fish, what, 3, 4, 5 hours at most, because you're literally just locked up guides all day.
Oh, your guides are locked up. My fingers get cold. I mean,
you're talking 8, 10, 12 degree air temps.
Mark's getting pissed because he's listening to me complain how cold I am.
And your fingers are stuck in gloves because you forget gloves and forget something at the house, and you're trying to wear mine and it's smaller.
Yeah, you got fucking midget hands.
I do. I give you the warmest gloves made. Cast steel head gloves. Nothing warmer. And you're freezing. These are too tight.
Oh, I cut off all circulation to my fingertips. Oh, my goodness. But for real, like we're getting back to, the smaller flies do seem to work in those conditions.
That's one. I'm not... I mean, everybody's, oh, you got big flies, big flies, big flies. I am not afraid to throw a 2-inch fly for a muskie. I don't care. If it's that time of the year and he's going to hit it and there's a reason for me to throw it, I'll try it.
Think about the gear guys that throw 4-inch crankbaits.
Yep, and it works.
Yeah.
I could do it all year long, but...
No, I definitely enjoy this time of year when we can throw 12-inch flies, 14-inch flies.
Absolutely, that's what we're doing right now. But when you start going out and it's you're leaving your house below zero and you're getting there and the sun's getting at the 5 or 6, throw 3-inch flies.
Yeah.
Guarantee you, they're going to work if you're on the fish.
You'll find more fish activity.
I'm not going to go searching with a 3-inch fly. That's just stupid, but...
Yeah, you're going to catch walleye and you'll catch...
Yep, but where we're able to go, where we know we're on fish, they hit it.
Yeah.
It works. It works. But that wading game like he does, that's a lot of fun. We've done a lot of it, and we do a lot of it. And I mean, once the drift boats and we had a jet boat down the road, that eliminates the need for it because then we can just run to it and then run to another spot all at the same time.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of that in the last couple of years for muskie.
We have. And it, like you said, it is fun. It's
what we're
different.
Talking about next Sunday doing.
Yeah.
Going, walking, and waiting for him.
Yeah, I can't wait to try that. Yeah. That's going to be something different.
And that's something that we've never tapped yet.
I don't even know where this place is that we're going. We're going to have to do some Google imaging.
Yep.
There has to be a road to get there.
Oh, yeah, there is. I've looked. You can park pretty doggone close to it.
Okay.
Good. Real close. That'll be fun.
Yeah, I can't wait to try it to see what it's like. And, who knows? We're going to catch a fish. I'm just going to dangle a double deceiver out in front of me.
Just walk up and down the stream.
Yeah, just like I did for the bass today.
Whoosh! That'll go toilet bowl flush right at the bank.
Like I said, like someone dropped a brick in the water.
Unreal. We fished this morning.
Oh, we did. I totally that seems like 3 days ago.
That was a fun trip. It's a secret, not secret, I don't know what you want to call it, gem that we have right smack close to us.
Yeah.
And it's tough because...
It's a little bit of a hike.
It's a lot of a hike. And it's only... You walk 3 times the amount that you can actually fish it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just not much to fish there, and you're subject on the fish moving and when they're going to move. If they move out, you can't fish where they actually are. It's just completely barricaded in. But if they lift up out of it, they make themselves vulnerable, and you can get some massive fish in a super, super tiny area.
Yeah.
Today they weren't there, but we've seen in the last few trips, they're there, and I've seen some mid-30 class pike in a 7-foot wide stream.
And it gin clear.
Yeah.
It's like a trout stream.
Yep.
It's so cool.
And they push up in it.
Today was my first time ever there. And I think it's not going to be one that I forget about soon.
Mm-mm. No, it's going to be one. It's just going to be one of them times where it's like, okay, we got an hour and a half. What can we do? You just keep going there and try to pattern it.
Yeah.
That's all you can do. That's it. That's the only way to try to figure it out is just to pattern it.
It is. And I think the wintertime is not the best time for that.
No, but.
But the other part that we found today might be.
Might be. Yeah, you're right. Because I think that's going to be when the creek's pumping cool water and they can get up out of that heat and get up into that cool.
Yeah. It's definitely going to be something to look into. And we're going to keep it up under our hat. And I think we've said too much.
Agreed. Agreed. Hopefully that will be hoisting a big fish out of there soon. I've seen them and they're there.
All we gotta do is turn around and then it just looks like woods behind you.
Yeah.
No one will ever know where we were.
Nope.
Nope.
Not one bit.
If
you stood up and took the picture, it would go completely over the creek and you would never know.
Actually, I was trying to buy a camera this week and I decided not to do it, but I was asking the guy if he had any lenses for sale. I was like, I need something in the 24 millimeter range with like an f-stop of 1.8. I said, why the fuck do you need something like that? I said, well, I need a boat lens that I can open the aperture up and not blow spots.
Mm-hmm.
Because everywhere we fish has, you know, defining features.
Yep.
He said, oh, that's a good reason. So, but he didn't have one, so... I bought no lens.
That's the drawing board.
Yeah.
So you're looking to get another camera. You have a crop sensor now, and you're wanting a full frame, right?
I wasn't actually in the market, but a full frame came up from a guy I know from an online forum, and it was an old camera, and the pieces didn't fall together right. I don't think for the money it would take that much better quality pictures than what my body does now.
Yeah.
So I'm passing on that, and I'm going to wait till someone wants to give me a camera. You know?
What? Yeah, I mean, yours does a good job the way it is now, as we've seen.
Yeah.
Got a crap load of pictures on my Dropbox now from it.
I think I sent you 24 pictures today, I think. Whew. So, if anyone's following Urban Flacco, follow them, because I don't put pictures on my own Instagram anymore, it doesn't seem like. Except for my... You're going to have the cheesy mustache bass picture. Probably tonight. Hey, on that, do we have anything else we want to hit on?
I don't think we've about covered everything. Hopefully next week we'll have more to talk about.
Yeah, hopefully next week we have a muskie under our belts and have trips lined up with Scott for future muskies that we can talk about the week after. On that note, tonight's show brought to you by Predator Flygear. Check them out, predatorflygear.com.
Arex Hooks, find them at arexhooks.com. So anything you're looking for, they've got it.
Alsdorf Genetic. If anyone is in need of hackle for predator flies, Joel is your man. Check him out at alsdorfgenetic.com.
I'm going to plug myself, Urban Fly Co. Because a lot of people have been hitting me up. The website's in the works, in all honesty. I started on it. I got so hammered with orders that it's a high priority, but it had to be put on the back burner for a week or two. So if you need flies, just message me on Instagram, on Facebook. If you got my phone number, just send me a text. So, I mean, anyway, just reach out to me. I'll work with you on there. I can send you an invoice, but the website's coming. I know there's a lot of people messaging me about when it's going to be up, but I need to kind of catch up a little bit here and keep rolling through, and I'll be adding that here in the next, hopefully by the end of the month, 1st of November.
If anyone has Mark's phone number, please crank call him.
No, let's not do that.
Hit up Sims Fishing at simsfishing.com, and Yeti, Built for the Wild. Go check him out. And we're getting YouTubed with the...
I was born an April Fool, full of gold, to brothel. Saved all my sins. I don't care if you and I, naked, barren, wrapped up in the sun.